Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang podcast, episode number 300. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Graham Thickens.
Whoopee, 300. Woo!
And Phil Wilson.
We are the 300.
And Tim Elliott is over making sure Sparta's safe. And if you don't know the movie 300, it was done back in, 2006?
Yeah.
And it was... it was pretty amazing, I thought.
But I think that you can pretty much guarantee a fine Photoshopped image on accompanying this podcast.
Oh, my God.
I think you'll have fun with this one. I can't wait to see what that one's like.
Well, don't raise expectations.
Will our faces be the ones on the, the wall of dead guys they have piled up?
Yeah, that could be. That could be. Oh, my God. Anyway.
So good news for Digital River leads the stories this week. So, they were on the cusp of losing their big Microsoft deal, and their buyout was sort of in peril because of it. And now they got their Microsoft deal, and the sale to Sirius is closed. So,
$840 million. Yeah,
going
that's pretty
private,
amazing. Right? Well, it's just like when Cisco bought WebEx. They didn't just buy them for the customer base or the specific technology they had. They also bought them because they had such a ubiquitous footprint of servers all over the world. And it's that way with Digital River. I mean, they've got customers everywhere, but also they've got, infrastructure that's set up in all these different countries.
Well, no matter what you say, it's still, I can tell you this, it's only half as much as we got for HyperIQ.
Yeah, right. Yeah. As though you'd be on the podcast now if that was the case.
$840 million. Peanuts.
Peanuts.
Yeah, yeah. Phil would be.
God,
Phil
wouldn't that be great? God, wouldn't that be just great?
It would be, but, you'd be sending us selfies all the time from somewhere warm.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah, here's Lori and I floating in the Gulf of Mexico.
I'd probably take you along. We'd all go. With that kind of money, I could travel with my own neighborhood.
Oh, man. Yeah, right. Yeah, on your new Gulfstream 5.
Yeah, right. So do you think this Digital River CEO is going to stay on, or was he just sort of the guy they brought in to sell it off?
Yeah, I'd say pull the chute.
Yeah, that's exactly what they brought him in for. I mean, it was the same thing at Lawson Software when they brought in Harry Debus. He was really there to set the whole thing up so that it could be sold. Mm-hmm. And, it just is what it is, because there are certain people that have been there, done that, and know how to configure everything and what stuff to cut, and make the books look as good as possible. So,
what are you saying?
I'm saying that he did. No. Not fraud.
So Cirrus Capital, who now owns it, will be naming a new CEO, I suspect, soon.
And usually how it goes, right?
Hopefully the employees aren't affected locally here.
Yeah,
I don't know. Have they said anything? They don't foresee any changes in employees? Because as soon as they say that, just pack your bags, kids.
Yeah, they always say that at the beginning, and, it seems. And then, within weeks, things can happen. But it doesn't say in the Business Journal story. So I suspect we'll be hearing about that going forward.
Well, at some point, wouldn't it be great to get somebody on that really understands what's happening in the private equity space? Because I got to tell you that I can't talk about certain things, but I'm privy to several companies that are run by people that I know that these private equity companies are doing roll-ups in specific spaces where they're going on, they're making strategic acquisitions, and they're bundling together four or five that can leverage each other's respective platforms to build a greater whole. And, that's happening more and more and more. Of course, they're also milking the hell out of some of this stuff, and so that they can dump it. But it really looks like the private equity firms are really moving forward quickly.
Yeah. Well, it would be interesting to have some M&A analysts on sometime. I don't know how much they could talk about what's going on, though, they could talk about things they're observing that they aren't involved in, I guess. So
Yep.
For you kids listening at home, M&A, mergers and acquisitions.
That's right. Well, I'm looking at the page at Cirrus Capital, and I'll put a link in the show notes, you know, that shows the Digital River acquisition, but also shows the other ones that they're involved in, like Stratus Technologies and Infrastructure Play. There's a network services company. There's a signaling and session control system company and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's just an interesting portfolio. And you kind of look at this and say, wait, are they just milking all this stuff, or is there some, you know, thread that runs through all of these?
Some grand plan.
Yeah.
Yep. So, well, and the fact that it's private, and that's, you know, one of the key words in the term private equity, you know, it's hard to know what's going on, you know.
Right.
You can read about it in the Wall Street Journal somewhat, but it's a lot of behind the scenes stuff.
Yep. Yep.
For sure.
Have you heard any of these other investments that they appear?
Nope. Well, Digital River wasn't exactly a name that rolled off everybody's tongue, but
that's true. That's true.
Well, there was another big story this week for Minnesota. Best Buy.
That's a huge story.
Best Buy banks on gadgets, trumping China with their first wedding registry. Oh my God.
How exciting.
I'm sorry, but you know,
really?
Yeah. It's like, it took them this long to get into the wedding registry business.
Well, I don't know.
It's not
the place that comes to mind when I think of, you know, I want to be registered at, but then again, when the first person that did that at Home Depot probably never really thought about that either. So,
well, you know, what's really interesting is that, Best Buy's shoppers, 80% of their, shoppers, or the influencers of purchases are women.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I know it's that way. I mean, there's no way I would have gone out and bought a 65-inch flat panel if I hadn't consulted with my bride.
Oh, you could have. You'd probably been in the last purchase you made without consulting
with her. Yeah, that's right. Well, but also...
Or sleeping with her, or living with her, or...
Yes, exactly. Well, you know, she still complains about these really phenomenal bookshelf speakers that we have up in our bookshelf, and because they're too big. They sound phenomenal, but she just hates the way they look. She's always hated it. It's been 20 some years, you know. Anyway.
So the big purchases you clear with her, but think how many small purchases Steve must make.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
That he doesn't
all the little gadgets and things that he's got, you know, in drawers and in, you know, things that he hides from his wife.
When she comes home from out of town, there's like 20 things he bought while she was on her trip, you know?
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, she can't complain, because if she starts harping on me on any of this stuff, then I'll just walk her up to our closet and say, how many of these shoes do you need?
Yeah, there you go.
It's like, oh my God. Anyway.
So are brides going to register for things for their husbands, or are husbands going to?
Oh, just for the bridal registry that they do together. You know, they'll go and they'll scan things like, you know, we want a Sonos speaker for the
precisely, yep.
For the patio,
or we want home automation,
TV, or home automation,
or a blender, or you know, any of that stuff. You know, it's something that you know they should have done a long time ago, obviously. But
yeah, let's remember they do get they have appliances there. They don't just do electronics. So
that makes sense. Yeah, right.
But I don't think I'd ever hop on somebody's registry at Best Buy, because I'd have to really love them a lot. Yeah. And if I love them that much, I'd probably be giving them cash.
Well, this next story also was inserted by our retail analyst, Tim Elliott, who's not here.
And
but
who didn't see this coming up mainstream?
Well, but you know what? You know, I have to admit, this particular story, Target will close its video streaming service. When I saw that headline, I thought, oh, yeah, they had a video streaming service.
Yeah. Remember when we talked about that when it came out, and we all kind of went, there was this long pause in the podcast, and we all went, really?
Yeah.
Is there really a need for another streaming service? Clearly not.
No.
Clearly not.
Yeah, I thought that was humorous.
Yeah, it kind of goes without saying. But, you know, now Mayo is working with Google, I don't know if you guys saw that story.
Yes.
Health Search, and now they're actually posting responses from Mayo Clinic, so which are going to appear probably on the side, from what I guess. I don't know. Have they started that yet, or is it just what's coming?
I'm not started yet or not.
I haven't really seen any results that have been taking place, but I don't know.
What if you Google whooping cough?
I don't know. Haven't tried it, but you know, so
yes, there it does. It shows up in the right side of search, where you might see like a Google Places or something like that, or a Google Business. So
okay.
What will be interesting, or what is kind of interesting to me, is how does the search compare? Will this combined search compare with like WebMD, which has been in this business for a long time? I haven't really tracked how the two, meaning Google and WebMD, would compare. But you would think that with Mayo involved now, Google would sure have a leg up on WebMD.
Well, if you check the BizJournal article, at the very end, it basically references WebMD and how stock went down on the announcement.
Sure.
So, I think that clearly they're in that same realm. So now you're seeing... You know, it not only shows at the top of, you know, for example, I just Googled whooping cough, and the whooping cough and Mayo Clinic show in as the top search result. They also show in that right-hand box. And then the second one is kidshealth.org. WebMD doesn't show up until about the fourth or fifth down, actually below the in the news stories.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm sure they've been working on this for a long time. I mean, consumer health information is a huge, huge need and trend. And, you know, there's just so much going on in that space.
Well, if you're interested too in search and some of the stuff behind search and these kinds of connections, like with Mayo Clinic, I put a link in the show notes to Google's Knowledge Graph, and it's a site that is, if you're just interested in this stuff, it's really fun to poke around and also to look at tips and tricks. That I really enjoy that, because one of the things that my wife always says to people, well, just tell Steve what you want to find, because he can find anything on the internet. And it's just because I know, you know, I've been using Google for so long, and I know some of the search methods and tips and tricks, and
that typing in the term you're looking for. Yeah, that's a tip.
There's operators that you can put on your search.
Yeah, so. There you go. Yeah,
oh, I see.
Yeah.
I got gotcha. I just want you to know that WebMD performs much better over whooping cough. It performs much better on jock itch. So if you Google jock itch, you still get the Mayo Clinic result on the right side, but jock itch number one, WebMD.
Well, you know what? In the words of Tim Jennison and Paul Montgomery, the guys that used to run New Tech when I was there, mm-hmm. we were in a meeting.
Did you say Nude Tech?
New Tech, N-E-W-T-E-K. They make the made the video toaster at the time, and now they make TriCaster. They've also got a Google box that you can bring in, or a Skype box.
I thought you were saying Nude Tech. N-U-D.
No. Anyway, but these guys
were
sitting in a meeting, and they said, you know what? That's purple. And I looked at them and I went, what? And then they looked at my two colleagues and they laughed and they said, should we tell Steve what purple is? And I said, yeah, tell me. Okay. And they demonstrated it. So, you know, Tim is arguing the point. It absolutely has to be red. It has to be red. It has to be red. And Paul's arguing the point. No, it has to be cream color. It has to be cream color. And then they end up compromising and it becomes purple. And the whole point to that was that, or, you know, his was blue or whatever the mix is. But anyway, the point was...
I was going to say cream color?
Yeah, I know. Okay. But anyway, so the whole point is that, you know, if you do things by committee, then you end up with something that's purple and nobody cares. You know, people are passionate about the red one or they're passionate about the blue one. But, you know, if you collaborate and mix them together, you end up with a dumbed down... offering in the product space. Anyway, that's a very simplistic way to look at it, but that's how I feel about a lot of the Mayo information. So you look at this stuff and it just looks like it's been scrubbed and cleaned and massaged to be as neutral and as middle of the road as you can possibly get. And so as a consequence, when I go looking for answers or information, I don't want to just look at that. I also want to know, well, what are the trends? You know, what's happening with this or what's happening with that? And you don't get any of that.
Yeah, it always hit me as something that lawyers have gone over
and over,
and they're trying to be so careful they don't give medical advice per se, you know. And it's just, yeah, it's kind of milquetoast. I'm with you on that.
Yep.
You know, another health information site that I believe is active now, consumer health information site, although I don't know that I've ever visited it because I don't know what we should search for it, is I believe United Health Group has a consumer health site. I've heard about it, and it may be in testing. I'm not sure. You'd think we would have seen news pop up about it if they wanted the whole world to know about it. But anyway, that's another site, consumer health content site that's brewing out there anyway.
Interesting. Huh. Well, our pals at the University of Minnesota and the Minneapolis Public Schools are partnering on an education technology assessment and strategy.
Yeah, I saw that.
So Phil, you're on the technology advising group for the Lakeville School District.
Yeah.
And is anything like this of interest to you guys?
Well, this seems to be, as I went through this particular release, it seems to be all IT infrastructure. I didn't see much.
Nothing about learning.
I mean, it didn't seem like there was a lot about learning. I don't know if you guys had a chance to read through the article. I didn't notice anything that, I mean, they constantly reference the public schools mission of, you know, educating kids and that sort of thing. But it didn't really say this was supposed to be done in the next several weeks. They're supposed to make a recommendation to the school system about, from what I can tell, their IT structure which seemed to be the biggest piece of that pie. I haven't read the entire proposal that they've put in front of, which I'm sure is available somewhere online. But it didn't strike me as doing a lot of research into how kids use, technology or how technology can be used in the classroom to improve the education. It doesn't really do much in that.
The only thing is that one of the sentences in here kind of grabbed me, and we should ping this media contact, Earl Johnston, to find out more. But the sentence is, as part of its ongoing focus on improving operational efficiency, the university later this year will implement a comprehensive upgrade to its core education, administrative, and information technology systems. So it looks like the core education systems are going to change. And what that means for the student and learning is unknown.
Right, exactly.
And it would be nice to really be able to read into that a little bit more.
It could be simply, you know, they're switching, you know, to another program for sharing of information. I don't know.
I think it's all about they're going to throw out Drupal and go with a WordPress.
That's probably.
I think that's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about. But I mean, look, you know, just this year, probably mid last year, the Lakeville school system, you know, our tech advisory council really kind of switched our general focus, which was, you know, we started out with, okay, well, we need to get, actual equipment into the hand, you know, these tools into the hands of students, you know, whether they be Chromebooks or iPads or, you know, wiring the school system for, you know, internet, you know, in all the schools and that sort of thing. It was very much a things sort of focus. But now it's very much of, okay, so now that we have these tools, how do we better educate with those tools? And how can kids get more out of using those tools rather than just the sake of having them? So, I mean, that's, I think, possibly the school district that we're talking about here, which is the Minneapolis School District, is maybe a little bit more behind in that situation. Maybe they're looking more at, okay, now what do we need to do to get the actual infrastructure up and running, and the tools provided, and they'll move to the next step, obviously, like we have. And because it really has to be, no matter what you do, it's not about just having the gadgets. It's not about having the access to the technology. It's how does the technology improve the lives and the education of our kids, you know, in an educational environment. That's really the most important thing.
If you can't do that,
you're in trouble.
I don't believe that. I think that if you just give it to them, they're going to explore and learn. And that's it. You don't really have to teach them anything. I'm kidding. Yeah. Okay. All right.
We don't need teachers. Just get iPads.
I wasn't sure there for just a minute. I was like, okay, now has he gone around the bend? Am I on the last podcast with my best buddy?
No. All right. So we have to. We have to jump into some of these other top stories, because there's a lot that's been going on. And I know that, you know, Tim, for example, he's in California right now, or is he in Washington, D.C. again, in favor of net neutrality. So he's out there lobbying the FCC to make sure that net neutrality passes, right?
I'm sure he is.
Yeah, we're kidding. Tim has taken the opposite view. But what was really cool, this one particular story had come out about the effectiveness of the kill switches on smartphones and iPhones in specific. And so stolen iPhones, because you can kill the device. So if it gets stolen, you can kill it and that's it. It can't get access. It won't work with any other mobile provider, any mobile provider for that matter. But here's what most people don't know. The stolen iPhones dropped by 40% in San Francisco, 25% in New York. In London, smartphone theft dropped by half. But it's only in cooperating countries with cooperating mobile providers.
Right.
So if the thing gets stolen here, who cares if it gets killed? If you're going to ship it over to, you know, Indonesia, the Philippines, or China, or something else, and sell it over there, it's still going to work on those mobile providers because they're not participating.
So it doesn't permanently disable the device? I thought the kill switch permanently disabled the device. Am I wrong, or is it just, you know, it's got to do something so it can't work on a network?
Well, it can't work on competing, or it can't work on a network that participates in it. It doesn't destroy the device, because if the device is recovered by the police.
Well, then quite frankly, I believe the word kill is overused here.
I think it is.
You know,
yeah.
Cripple maybe would be better, but not kill.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, I don't know. I hadn't spent enough time with the kill switch legislation to take a look at it. So,
all right.
But that was passed here in Minnesota, wasn't it?
The first one.
Yes.
Yes. Yep. Okay.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, L. Franken was involved, it would seem to me. He had to have been.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That's all he does is get involved in that kind of stuff.
Oh, that's not all he does.
I actually got an email from
Magnet 360.
Yeah.
I'm going.
I figured you would.
Oh, I want to see the panel. It's a panel on net neutrality, and Franken's going to be there. He's going to be one of the participants.
Yeah, wow. Do we have that on our list? No, because
it's invite only.
Oh.
Only certain people. Guess only I'm net not. Neutrality supporters.
I guess I'm not.
There'll be protesters out in front.
Then why'd you get one, Graham?
I have no idea.
I think Scott Libman and Dan Malin sent it out to who's ever on their mailing list.
You know, and you want to know how big that list is now? Huh. The Minnesota Cup, if it went to the Minnesota Cup list. Now, maybe it didn't. The Minnesota Cup list is now 13,000. So when they're blasting stuff out, it's going, now that's beyond the Twin Cities, I'm sure. But anyway, I've got your net neutrality story by Andy Kessler. Forget net neutrality. Focus on fiber.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll send you. I'll put that in the show notes. That's a good one.
That would be interesting.
You know, if you've got no net neutrality, what's the fiber worth?
Thanks to regulation, we basically have an internet duct taped to the infrastructure from the 70s and 80s. So, you know, you can read his take is that that's what we should be focusing on is fiber and innovation and not regulation, which is, you know, the stance of the anti net neutrality folks.
See, here's the thing. This is why whenever I hear these protests about the U.S. slow internet and how South Korea and Japan and all these other countries have very, very fast internet, it's like, well, yeah, Germany's the size of Montana. So, of course, it's easy to do. And do you remember when we did one of these first stories like in 2008 or 2009? And at that point, the projection was that it would cost $280 billion to bring fiber to the home in major U.S. cities where 80% of the population of the U.S. lives. So forget about rural and any $280 billion. And it's like, well, okay, so who's going to come up with that money? We can't even keep our bridges and roads and intact.
Well, Google's trying to do it in major cities around the country, and at least four have green-lighted it, I guess. But, you know, they obviously can't do it alone. But, you know, read what Andy Kessler has to say about it. It's interesting. I put the link in. It might require, I hope it doesn't require a subscription. It's an opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal.
They usually leave those open, those blog posts and so on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I would think so.
Well, I thought this was, this next article I thought was really interesting about how, you know, President Obama went out to do this major cybersecurity summit out in Silicon Valley. And it was at Stanford. And they invited everybody, of course. And top tech CEOs basically gave him the cold shoulder, except for Tim Cook at Apple. And a handful of others, but Nadella from Microsoft and Larry Page from Google, Mark Zuckerberg, Marissa Meyer, none of them showed up. Eric Schmidt didn't show up.
Could it be that they see it as a political move? No.
Do you think?
No.
Not a chance.
Everything the guy does is politics. So, you know, they're busy guys. They got other things to worry about than supporting his latest, you know, soundbite.
Yeah. Well,
you know, so.
See, the one thing about, you know, the argument against the Department of Homeland Security and all the money that's been spent on terrorism to keep us safe is suspect, because there basically hasn't been any touting of successes and so on, and you know that's the argument against. But the fact that terrorism is this threat that lives in the shadows. It's one that we can't see. It's one that we really can't identify. And as a consequence, you know, the fear can be ubiquitous and be everywhere. And it's that way with cybersecurity. I mean, think of the excitement that these top defense firms must have, because all of them are lining up. I mean, all the big ones, Lockheed and everybody else, are all lining up behind cybersecurity, because the amount of money that's going to be spent on cybersecurity, and it's justified. I mean, you know, I'm Mr. Security Boy, right? So there's no question that it's justified, but how much of it is justified? And it's a huge concern. And you know, part of the thing was Tim Cook being out there. He got up and gave this talk, and there'll be a link in the show notes. And he basically, you know, because Apple's been called on the carpet because of the new iPhone security, and they apparently don't have the private key, and so they can't, there's no back door in it, and they can't get in, and they had to do that to protect themselves in China. And he basically got up and gave a talk that pretty much slammed that whole approach, and the fact that he's got to do the right thing for the business, you know, that we have to sell the best products and services in the world and all of that. What'd you think of that, Graham, about that talk?
Well, I didn't drill into it, but, you know, it was a great PR opportunity to talk about Apple Pay, though.
Yeah, it was. Well, and the federal government thing, right?
The tie-in with the government. Yeah. So you know, you can look at that as a reason why he might have done it. And, you know, and we haven't even touched on the big story of the week of Apple, you know, going over $700 billion, first company ever to be valued that high.
And, yeah.
You know, but, yeah, you well, know, before I didn't really drill into the whole thing, though, to be quite honest with you.
Okay. Well, before you skip past the thing about the federal government, so just so everyone knows it's listening, is that Tim Cook revealed that Apple Pay is going to support federal payment cards later this year, including Social Security and those cards that are used by veterans. I forget what they're called. So the federal transactions, you know, like even maybe even paying for tickets and gift shop items at national parks will also work with Apple Pay. So it's really going to be ubiquitous. And one of the reasons that everybody seems to be jumping on this is because your card number is never given away. It's a token.
Mm-hmm.
And so nobody, even if they can somehow do a man in the middle attack and get be inserted into the transaction, the information they're getting can't be reused. It's a one-time token. And so it's pretty interesting.
Hmm. Yeah, so the Bloomberg story was Obama's visit to Silicon Valley is a big win for Apple Pay. Yeah. Are you using Apple Pay yet, Steve?
I'm not myself.
See, I'm not.
My
credit cards are not with major banks that are yet supported.
All those offshore banks? Is that what it
well,
is?
No,
not taking the Swiss account you're using?
No, it's where he's got his money in the Caymans.
My local banks are not part of the big banks that are supporting it. I have an American Express card, but I try to never use it. That would be the only one I have that's supported. But I'm not going to go use that card just so I can use Apple Pay.
Well, I only have three cards in my Apple Pay. I have my American Express, my Wells Fargo debit card, and then my Chase Visa. I haven't put anything else in there, but it's great because our hairstylist, of course, the guy that owns the salon, the guy's a tech geek. He was a computer engineer. He got his computer science degree at the U of M, and then somehow ended up
running barbering.
I'm sure he makes a couple of bucks. He's got about 50 barbers or 50 stylists, but there in Walgreens and a couple of coffee shops I go to and so on. I mean, it's really starting to make its way.
Yeah, well, you know, if you got Wells Fargo or Chase or maybe U.S. Bank, you're okay. Right. But I don't use any of those, so I haven't been able to use it yet.
Have you done it, Phil?
No, I haven't taken the plunge yet. I know that, a lot of my partners have done that. So, but I haven't hopped on yet.
Yeah,
you know, it's just a matter of time, I guess, because, it's more and more convenience. I'm looking forward to that. So I'm interested in seeing how they're going to beef up the Touch ID piece at Apple.
Which is coming next, apparently.
They're hinting that they're going to be beefing up that Touch ID. So I think that, in fact, even maybe moving it right onto the screen itself rather than just on the home button.
You mean I have to buy a new phone?
Possibly.
It.
Possibly. Right. Maybe retina scanning, something like that.
That'd be kind of cool. Yeah.
Just people staring into their phones. Cool.
Like they aren't already. All the time.
All right. Before we talk about this last Apple thing, I have to say something in advance, if you guys don't mind. You remember Control Data, of course, Graham, you know it well, you used to work there, but, when William Norris began to move away from the core business and started doing all this other stuff with Plato learning and he was doing stuff with, social issues and all that kind of stuff. He took his eye off the ball.
The line was meeting society's unmet needs.
Yeah.
It's burnt into my brain.
Well, that's
I was there. I was involved in a lot of that stuff. So it was, okay. it was crazy times. Well, but anyway, continue.
Yeah. So when Google started doing the whole self-driving car thing, is I thought, come on, Google, you're really taking your eye away from, you know, off the ball and away from your core business. And now there's some rumblings. I'll find a link to the couple of articles, but some rumblings about the fact that, you know, Google's results are not all that great. And it's because they're trying to do too much that's not germane to their core business. And so I wonder about these next couple stories that we put in here about Apple gearing up to challenge electric car maker Tesla by building their own car. And they're certainly hiring a lot of people out of the automotive industry.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? There was talk about Tesla rifling people from Apple.
Yeah.
And now it turns out Apple's been hiring Tesla engineers and others too. And the one big one they hired was the president of the Mercedes-Benz R&D
yes.
group, North America, which yep. I guess is based in the Bay, in Silicon Valley, the R&D center is. And so, yeah, there's a lot of maneuvering going on.
But so, I think any company the size of Apple that has the war chest of money, it would be foolish not to look into anything that is emerging in tech. And clearly Elon Musk has indicated that, you know, there's something to this electric car thing. So I think that, I think whether they ever develop an Apple car, which I doubt they ever will, it makes all sorts of sense to be involved in the automotive industry.
Well, yeah, you have to look at how long have we heard about the so-called Apple television?
You know,
and when's that ever going to come? So it's like, now we're going to be talking about a car? Come on,
yeah.
You know. But
and they seem to be doing just fine with their core product.
But they are working on something that looks like a minivan. And it's like, there are people saying, why would they pick a minivan? are you kidding?
Well,
because Tesla and all the other people are picking, more of a sports coupe look or a sporty looking thing.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, who knows? But I'll tell you, the CNET story, looking down the road at Apple's automotive future, is really a good read. And it's a longer story and actually came out the day before yesterday when the Wall Street Journal story broke. So they're both very, very interesting. I mean, there's definitely stuff going on. Apple spending money on it, and hiring people. And, a lot of these sites pick up on, they watch what Apple lists as far as job openings, and you can learn a lot from that, but it's more than just recent hirings. There's been stuff going on quite a while, apparently.
Well, listen,
at a separate facility apart from Cupertino. Somewhere else in the valley where they have these. Didn't I read like 100 people already?
Yeah, 100 people. Well, yeah. What I found interesting was that the one state in our union, Texas, that is the quintessential free market state and all of that, all the car dealers got together and they convinced the legislature to not allow Tesla to come in and open their own stores and sell direct. And one of the fears is that there are two cash cows in a car dealership. It's not the new car sales. It's used car sales, and it's the service operation.
Mm-hmm.
And they would still have the used car sales, but the service operation, if electric cars become ubiquitous, basically their service goes down to nothing. Because there's just not a lot that, don't have to change the oil. And, it's basically working on a computer. Mm-hmm. And there's very little that has to happen. So they actually legislated against allowing Tesla to come in and sell direct,
yep.
Which is, Ayn Rand is probably turning over in her grave,
But, yeah, well, that dealer lobby is really, really strong. There was one of the states out east, was it New Jersey or one of the states in the Northeast that really came out hard on that too.
Yeah, yeah.
How many states can Tesla even sell direct? Are they in certain states?
I haven't been keeping track.
Do they have a showroom here? I don't know.
I believe so.
Well, no, I don't think they do.
Yeah, they do.
They do?
I think so, yeah. Let me.
Can they actually sell out of there, though, or are they just showing? You know,
they can only sell on Sundays. No, I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, there, that would be an interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Flip, wouldn't it? Yeah, huh.
Well, so something else happened this week. I thought this was a big story, and here's why. I've been doing technology coaching with clients. This is just as a side thing where they say, you know, could you just kind of come in and act as a sort of a de facto CTO for 5 hours a week or something? But I need help from you to help me, you know, configure my phone and my tablet, and my computer. And, oh, by the way, help me to understand how to work all these VoIP phone apps that I've got and yada, yada, yada. And so I've been doing this technology coaching on the side, and I've had family members on both sides of the family, my wife's sisters especially, pitching me on, Steve, you really ought to like make a business around this to help people to do that, you know. And so I told a couple of my sister-in-laws about Google Helpouts, which was a service using the Google Hangout technology. And you know, I kept going there and kept looking at it. And, you know, Google took 20% of what you have, but you could deliver online courses, and it had appointment scheduling and all this other stuff. And it was very, very cool. And they would have to vet, especially anybody that had to be licensed, like a psychologist, they had to actually vet them first. And sometimes it would take several weeks to make sure that they were licensed in the state they were going to practice in, and that they couldn't practice over state lines and all this different kind of stuff. Well, Google's shutting it down. They're pulling the plug.
What a surprise. Like, they don't do that with a lot of stuff. But this was for more than just tech. This is for on any topic, like photography, psychology,
bingo,
anything, right?
Yep, yep. Anything. Holy. Where there was an expert who... And the thing is I was watching this and realized that it wasn't even something that I would do. And I would be perfectly suited for something like this, because I, you know, I love to help people, and I love being online and doing things. I'm coaching people, I'm doing screen sharing sessions and all that kind of stuff all the time. And yet I never looked at this and said I could make a business out of this, because you know,
you couldn't have made enough money at it, or
couldn't have made enough money at it. You know, it's possible that I could have booked up, you know, every hour of the day. But the kicker is that it doesn't scale. And so that's the one issue that I have with anything that's a one-off. I mean, you know, Phil at HyperIQ, you probably went through this all the time. Graham, you go through this with, you know, client after client after client that you work with. I do the same thing, especially with our Innovate Press business. The only difference is this trend business where we sell reports and color forecasts and all that. That's the only one that scales, because, you know, we get orders when we sleep.
Right.
You know, they're
exactly.
For coming from overseas. And this thing didn't scale. And that was the only, because it would have been nice if they would have added a component where you, as an expert in a given field, you could actually create courses then that would allow somebody to either do a one-on-one with you, or they would have a hosted course offering like a lynda.com.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So you could make money at night. Yep.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I was going to say Lynda is a good one to call out, and I actually know the head of marketing out there in Santa Barbara. He's from here.
Oh,
but,
really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Nate. Oh, I'm blanking on his last name. Anyway, this is sort of similar to what, isn't it? Similar to what About.com About.com and or Ask.com was trying to do, or maybe is still doing.
And how.com, and there's a lot of others.
A
lot of others that are trying to get in the space,
they scaling though? I mean,
they're really not. And here's the only thing that I've seen that seems to be doing really well. Our YouTube channels,
individuals
that are doing, and there's a guy, and I can't remember his name now, but he does plumbing on YouTube, and I'll see if I can find the
and he's turned it into a profit profit-making business.
Yeah, I read an article on Mashable quite some time ago. I'll see if I can find that too. But this guy walks you through, you know, how to change the petcock in your toilet tank. You know, and he literally walks you through and shows you all the different kinds. And
No. Petcock?
Yeah, that's the name. Well, that's a little... Whatever the...
It's not a petcock. It's called a ball cock.
Okay, all right. Thank
it's
you.
It's a ball... A petcock is a little valve, so...
You really know your plumbing parts.
Well, I just wanted to make sure that, you know, being a technology sort of based show, you shouldn't be throwing around terms you don't know the answers or the definitions of.
I apologize in advance to everyone listening that I don't know plumbing.
All plumbers but
Mashable had this Mashable had this article about how this guy was making like $85,000 a year as a plumber, which is you know, a damn good business and a damn good offering. And when he started doing these YouTube videos, he did it on the side and he had his son shoot the things. And now after like 4 years, he's making between $300,000 and $360,000 a year off of his YouTube channel. It's like, what? Yeah. What? With plumbing videos? But sure. You know, I mean, everybody like me, I take my iPad and I go set it up and I start playing the video and then I stop it. And then I do what he said. And then I play it again and I do the next thing and, you know, and it works. I mean, it's great.
And boy, before you know it, you got indoor plumbing.
Yes, exactly. I got myself a new toilet.
The guy identified a need and he's meeting it, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's what entrepreneurship is all about.
Yep.
Now contrast that with a story I found this morning in Fast Company and handed off to my wife about, someone on Etsy who's making $1 million.
I saw that.
And
oh my God.
What? And the first thing she said is, that's impossible. And I said, well, I didn't say she was knitting it all herself.
Well, exactly.
It turns out she's got 15 workers. She's not just knitting. She's selling all kinds of resale merchandise that she's buying in India. And it turns out it's kind of a scam because it's about Etsy. Etsy is supposed to be about handmade goods, about individuals selling their own wares. Well, the whole thing has really turned out to be not the way things go, you know, Etsy. Yeah. And now Etsy's positioning for an IPO, and it was a quaint little way to start an idea, but it's turned into another gigantic eBay where it's a big free-for-all, and people are selling stuff that isn't handmade at all, that they never touched. You know, and
you sound a little angry.
Well, I'm not angry. Read the comments on the story.
Yeah.
I mean, people are lashing out hell?
Etsy? I thought you were the big free market fan. Shouldn't that feel free to evolve?
I am a big free market fan, as I just said, for Ray for the plumber. But the point is, Etsy is not what it's presented itself to be. And I wondered about Etsy right from the get-go because... You know, how much can people really sell that they make with their own hands and when they put it up on Etsy? And, you know, my wife does that kind of stuff with her own business, you know, handmade stuff. But she doesn't want to be on Etsy because you're just putting it out there for other people to copy.
Yeah.
And what are you going to make? You know, she sells locally. She's not interested in selling to people in, you know, Maine or Florida or somewhere, you know.
Well, the only
My point is Etsy is turned into somewhat of a joke in this story, you know. I mean, if they position themselves as we aren't really about handmade goods, we were just kidding. We're like another eBay. Fine, then, you know, do it, but don't pretend you're something you're not, you know.
Well, what I think is interesting.
This is the Etsy about page. If you go to the Etsy about page, it says Etsy is a marketplace where people around the world connect both online and offline to make, sell, and buy unique goods.
Right. They've changed it. They've
Well, and the one thing I need to point out with Etsy is I went on there some time ago to look for a bag for my MacBook Pro, and I started looking at the bags, and I said, "Oh, that's interesting. That's kind of a cool bag." And then I was searching some more, and well, that looks like the same bag. And then pretty soon, that looks like the same bag too. And then pretty soon, I realized they're all the same bag. You know, and so somebody somewhere is, you know, got a sweatshop going and they're making these things and a bunch of different people are selling them.
You just assume it's a sweatshop. Well, you guys, you guys always just really get just to go right for the, you know, the negative here.
Well, it's because, you know, when I was in Peru and our friend Janine is from Peru, from Lima. And so we've talked about this, but the one thing that made me sad was that all of these phenomenal goods that are made by the natives that live in these villages, you know, in the middle of nowhere are collected and collated and sold by aggregators in Lima. And they're the ones that are putting things up, you know, so the people in the villages get, you know, pennies a month and, you know, the aggregators are making all the money. And I mean, again, not that that's not, you know, I'm not saying that they all need to get that, but that's one of the things where you look at stuff like this and you think, okay, of course aggregators make money.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, when individuals can do something on their own to build their own business and make money, that's great. But, you know, they all can't do that. But the comments on this story in Fast Company about the Etsy lady are, you know, they're accusing her of using child labor, you know, in India and, you know, taking advantage of the poor children and all this kind of thing, you know. But it's all in, you know, it's you know, there's many ways to look at a story like that. Yep. You know, she's an entrepreneur and Etsy is, you know, positioned as in such a way, but they're really turning into just another eBay. So they're taking over for a lot of what eBay used to do, maybe is what the grand plan was all along.
Yep. Yep. So I put, go ahead, Phil.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I put this next story in.
It was tongue in cheek, wasn't it?
What? No, it wasn't.
The AT&T thing?
They debut a 7 gig share plan with rollover data. Well, it's the reason I put it in was not because...
You mockingly put it in there, didn't you?
I did not. And you said T-Mobile has 10 gig with rollover and Kim Kardashian.
So, I think that was Tim, but I would agree. I would completely agree.
Well, the reason that I put it in there was not because I thought it was a great program. I wanted to talk about it. And the one thing I wanted to talk about was...
Says the man big, grandfathered in on all the low rates.
I know. Yeah. But the two things I want to talk about was, one, December of 2015 is when the European Union makes it mandatory that all mobile providers have to allow roaming with no extra charge. So if you live in France and you go over to Germany, or it's fine. You can just use your phone anywhere in the European Union. So that's,
and first and foremost, if you live in France, thanks very much for listening. And
yes, I'm sorry, exactly.
You don't understand a word we're saying.
Exactly. We should talk like this. Anyway, but it was the second trend was this rollover data thing. And so one of the things that has bothered me about my Verizon plan on my iPad is there are some months where I realize, oh my gosh, you know, I'm using, you know, 300 megs and I got 2 days left to use 2 gigs or, you know, whatever program I was on, and I didn't use it and I just lost it. And I lost it and I lost it and I lost it. So finally, I just canceled the thing. And then when I need it, I will resubscribe. And, you know, if you do that, if you go a whole year, you end up having to go back into the store and have them set it up because you lose your phone number that's attached to your mobile device. But this rollover data thing, I think it'd be awesome because there are times when, boy, I'd sure love to have had, you know, the 6 or 8 gigs that I lost last year still hanging out waiting for me to use it.
Yeah.
But anyway.
It's another value add if you're an AT&T customer, I guess, and they're trying to keep you, you know.
Exactly. All right. So one sort of weird article here about a mega drought.
So, why did you put this
in the coming decades? Okay. So here's why I put it in there. I put it in there because of all the fruits and vegetables that we get from California specifically. Mm-hmm. We get 40-some percent of our fruits and vegetables from there, and they have multiple growing seasons. So that's an impact. I mean, there's all the reasons why drought is a bad thing and blah, blah, blah. But what I think about is all the money that Apple's spending on the solar plant in Arizona And I think about all the stuff that Tesla's doing around battery technology. And I think about all of the cooling that's required for these big data centers that Google's running and all of that. And I think about how will this drought affect technology infrastructure in the West and Southwest. And I thought that was pretty interesting because, you know, there's maybe it'll just be recycling water in new ways and so forth. But it's going to be a problem.
But just remember, it's going to be a dry heat.
It's going to be a dry heat. That's right.
And you really think about it now, you know, they have to put the farms in Arizona, the solar farms in Arizona. Soon they can put them anywhere.
Yep. Well, Phil's always looking for the silver lining.
I'm trying to look on the positive side.
That's
well,
right.
I mean, yeah. I think the takeaway should be not what are we going to do to cool down the servers. It should be, hey, you know, we really ought to get to work on reversing this trend. This would probably be the more biggest takeaway from a mega drought gripping in the coming decades. So.
Yes. Well, what I would encourage people to do is go to the link in the show notes to WashingtonPost.com and then use the little slider to go back and forth and look at the spaces. And you know, they keep saying that Minnesota's weather by 2050 will look like Kansas today. And Kansas hardly gets any snow. And there are days sometimes in February that are in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And
bring
that's
not last year, but yeah.
Well, I know, yeah. Bring it on, except our lake levels are dropping.
So much for the land of 10,000 lakes.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, yeah, we got the water, that's for sure.
We're just kicking zeros off of there.
Yeah. That isn't going to, you know, we won't lose our lakes for a long, long, long time. You know what always kills me about these drought stories, like out in California, is, you know, a storm comes along that, like recently in the Bay Area, and just dumps all this rain on them, and immediately they have somebody say, yeah, but it's not helping the drought. You know, they're going to do nothing for the drought. It's like, well, wouldn't you think that multiple storms would do something to help fill up those reservoirs at least a little bit.
Yeah, well, you gotta realize that the when the ground is dry, it takes a lot longer for water to soak in. And if it comes down in torrents, it doesn't soak in. It just
maybe, but you'd still floods. Think it would fill those, do something to help the situation, but it never does. You know, it's never enough. So. Okay.
Well, probably isn't. Okay, it's time for to release the horses. Release the horses!
Oh, no horses.
What?
Incredible.
It is time for Steve's Security Tip of the Week.
Okay, I'd like to discuss just a little bit and stop here for just a little bit and talk a little bit about branding. Now, you see, Steve, when you get a hook, you stay with the hook.
All right.
You're confusing people.
Horses out of the barn. Okay, I got it. Okay. Yeah. Well, Phil, you know this stuff. You know radio well. Anyway, quick story. So I'm having coffee with a buddy of mine. And I said, yeah,
I'm going to... What a funny story. I love that.
Yeah. So I said, I'm going to go up and just get a refill. And he goes, okay, well, I'm going to run to the bathroom. I said, okay. So I picked up my laptop and my iPhone. And he goes, it'll be fine here. And he takes off. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to teach him a lesson. So I took his laptop and I brought it up to the counter. I said, hey, I'm going to prank my buddy. Would you put this back there? And the guy goes, sure. Cause he knows who I am and so on. And so I come back with my refill, sit down, open my laptop. And my buddy comes back and he goes, where's my laptop? I go, did a humma humma. And he absolutely freaks out.
Oh, you nasty guy.
So that what you're saying is that was the last coffee you had with that friend.
Yeah. So anyway, so he just absolutely freaked out. And I told him, I said, have you ever considered, getting a lock? And he goes, what do you mean? And I go, you know, getting one of those laptop locks because, you really should take a look at doing that. And he said, you know what? I got to find it first. And he jumps up and I go, wait a minute. I put it. It's a go up to the counter and ask for it back. And he comes back and he was like, you asshole. But then we went to the Kensington lock page and he looked at the, at buying a Kensington lock. Cause he could have put it around the leg of the table.
I was going to say, strap it to the leg. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's secure.
I don't know that I've ever seen anybody do that in any coffee shop anywhere. Do they? No.
I don't think if I'm at a coffee shop, I'll just grab my computer and take it with me to the bathroom.
Well, yeah, so do I. But I mean, I can't tell you how many people I see that get up and walk away and go up to the coffee thing and all that. And they're right next to the door.
Dude, so it's Minnesota. Like a, it happens.
Yeah, but it'd take like a nanosecond for somebody to grab that laptop and bolt out the door and you're gone. Or what if when you were at Coco all the time, obviously, you know, a lot of the people there and so on, but did you lock up your computers?
No.
So what if you went to lunch for an hour?
Just leave them there.
We're very trusting at Coco.
Okay.
It's part of the community attitude, dude. Kind of look out for each other.
Okay. Well, my security tip of the week is consider a laptop lock. And also when you go to this Kensington site, if you're interested, they have iPad locks and all kinds of other stuff.
Do they have the club for your MacBook Air?
No, they don't, but I'll be happy to sell you an old baseball bat I've got in case you catch the guy that stole your laptop.
What is the club? What?
Oh, you know, the club. Remember the club for your steering column, your steering wheel? You
put in
your
steering wheel. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, right.
So.
All right, kids, it's time for Cool Thing of the Week.
All right.
We have
and
to
I
talk.
Want to start with Graham.
You do?
Oh, yeah. Since we kind of had a little, this is a weird one. We kind of had a little auto sub theme going on in this show.
Yep.
I'm going with the Ram ProMaster City, the little cargo van that could. Just written up today in the Wall Street Journal. It's I've been wondering why Honda didn't continue with the Element, which is such a popular car. And
yeah, but it kind of turned into the Pilot, didn't it? Wasn't that the evolution of the Element?
No, no. The first one of that trend was Toyota Scion, whatever that box is.
I think Element preceded that.
Oh, yeah, do you?
Element was built later.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the whole reason behind the Element and then that whatever that Scion box is, the XB or XA or whatever it is, the whole reason behind that was to create something cool and trendy that millennials would buy.
Exactly.
And it turned out that you know, people on the other end of the age spectrum were going, that's a hell of a value for a big vehicle. And they were buying them like crazy. So you'd see all these blue hairs driving around in Honda Elements. And
they're so functional. My son has one and everybody loves them still. And they stopped making the damn things in like 06 or 07. They only made them for about 4 years.
Yeah.
Well, lo and behold, Fiat Chrysler, whatever it's called now, has come out with this Ram ProMaster City. And I put the link in. You're going to have to go check it out. It's really looks a lot like a Honda Element, and it has features like it, but it has much more that you can, you know, upgrade to, you know, and it's only like $25K base price. And then they show a model that was tested that was $29 with a back seat. I mean, it becomes sort of like a minivan, but it's really more of a utility vehicle.
Huh.
I think it's pretty cool. It's got, a lot of power, a lot of engine to it.
The most important thing is, Graham, how will hamsters like it? That's the important thing. Will hamsters, and better yet, hip hop hamsters, will they drive these things?
Well, you know, the guy who writes the car reviews in the journal is Dan Neal, who's, you know, very well regarded. And the first thing he talks about is his dogs and how it's just perfect for his dogs. And this guy is usually reviewing like top of the line sports cars and, you know, the super duper Mercedes and Lexuses and Teslas and everything else. And he chose to, you know, review this little 25K utility vehicle. I think it's pretty cool looking. So that's mine.
Very nice. Okay.
Steve?
It's me? Well, you. So one of the things that I hate when I take the dog out is
not having a van to put him in.
Well, not having a van to put him in. But in all seriousness, to be able to use my my phone, so if my phone rings, or if I want to, you know, check something, or I want to take a photo or whatever, got to take my gloves off. And in the wintertime, I'm sure I'm not alone in this, but, you know, I get these little cuts around my fingers, you know, on the edges of my fingers. And, oh, man, it really hurts. It's like little paper cuts, you know, and then I got to take all kinds of stuff and all of that. So I bought these glider gloves. So one of my my cousin recommended them, one of my cousins. And so I bought them at because you can't buy them in any stores here. So I bought it at Amazon. And they are the best. You know, most of those kinds of touch gloves have just something on the finger, so you can touch your device, right? And then the stuff on the finger gets worn off, and it doesn't work. Well, these glider gloves are like, you know, the whole damn thing works, and they're relatively warm. I mean, they're not like wearing big mittens or anything, but anyway, I thought they were pretty cool, especially in this weather.
Do they make glider mittens?
They do not. Because you need your fingers.
Oh, okay.
So,
glidergloves.com is not opening for me, but the Amazon link looks like that works.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to glidergloves.com.
$30. Yeah. I think I got a pair of touch sensitive gloves from Target for $15, I think. So.
Yeah.
But again, they're just the finger and
right
and thumb. So
these are nice though for the price.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. Stylish.
Well, all right. Here's my cool thing of the week. The folks at Fuse Designs, or Fuse, have created the No Key Lock, which is a Bluetooth access lock.
Are you sure it's not Fuzz?
It's Fuse.
I'm kidding. Okay.
Fuse Designs. And it's Bluetooth, so you can open the lock with your mobile device.
Very nice.
Huh.
I think that's very cool.
And so it pairs right with your device, right?
With your device. And so, you don't have to get the device out to unlock or press a button or anything. It's just, it's designed so if it's nearby, it will function.
That's very cool.
I like it. And this is not a Kickstarter. This is available now.
Yes.
Nice.
So do you guys know, have you read anything at all or seen anything about the new Bluetooth 4? Technology that's you know, in terms of how secure it is and so on?
Not really up on that. Tell us.
No, I don't know. I was asking the question, you know, not rhetorically either, about Bluetooth 4, because that's one of the things that, you know, seems to be the scare du jour tactic, which is, you know, the Internet of Things is not secure and your TV can now listen to you and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's freaking everybody out. And so everybody's looking at stuff like this and saying, not everybody, I mean, you know, Joe and Jane consumer, are looking at it from a security standpoint. So just was curious. I'll have to dig into that some more.
The coolest thing I'm doing with Bluetooth lately is I got a shutter release. That's a little button I hold in my hand. And it was like $10 on, or something like that on Amazon. And I thought, there are times when I want to hold my phone up and get a wide shot, and it's really hard to press the damn shutter on the phone. So I get this little thing I hold in my hand, click, works like a charm.
There you go.
Bluetooth, pair it with the phone. Yeah.
Did you get a selfie stick too?
No, I've thought about it though, but I don't really shoot selfies. I haven't really gotten into that, you know.
Oh, by the way, I did go to Fuse Designs, and the No Key Lock is one for $59.99 or two for $54.99.
Huh.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it says here the two for $54.99 is the most popular choice. Jeez, go figure.
I guess.
All right, wow. Upcoming. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that net neutrality forum that that Graham and Steve alluded to was an invite-only thing is open to the public.
I see that now.
See, it's on the 19th.
They're trying to bulk it up.
From 11:30 to 12:30, and we put a link in the show notes, and you can register for it. So it promises to be kind of interesting, I think.
Should be good.
And then, go ahead.
Social Media Breakfast, Minneapolis, St. Paul on February 20th, and oh, by the way, Michael Roventin, who runs SMB MSP, was on Fox News, and I'll find a a link to that video.
Fox 9 News, you mean?
Fox 9 News, yeah.
It wasn't on like Retta Van Susteren or something like that.
No.
Okay, just so we know.
Yeah. Outraged about something, I'm sure. Yeah.
But he was talking about? It was all about social media, and it was about teens and young millennials moving away from Facebook and all of that. But they had him, in a nickel tour to give him about SMB and what social media breakfast is and all that. He did a really great job. I thought he was very succinct and came across very well.
He's the man. And then, of course, there's some other things that have been on our list for a while, but also we always, you know, Steve and I always get to plug our events. It's our podcast, right?
Yep. The Internet of Things event. We're going to have a new website launching Monday.
Well, you got tired of that one?
It didn't meet our needs for an event ongoing. So we'll be launching that with a schedule and all that stuff. So that should be good.
Cool. And then Mobile March is set for the 26th of March. Yep. You can find that at mobilemarch.com or mobilemarchtc.com. We would encourage you to. Tickets are moving at a fairly good clip this year. The keynotes have been chosen and we're still working up finalizing the agenda, but multiple tracks of learning we hope to see you in, and a heck of a price.
That sounds great.
There you go.
All right.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I forgot one that I'm going to slip in for the 18th of February next week. The local chapter of PDMA, which is the product managers, are having an event in the evening on personal branding of all things, which ought to be interesting to have product managers talking about personal branding, but I'm going to slip that in.
Probably. PDMA. I thought that was public display of major affection. What is that?
It stands for Product Development and Management Association, I think. Okay. It's a big deal nationally.
It is. Yeah.
The local chapter is actually quite strong.
Cool.
They do good events, so I'll slip that one in too. And then, of course, we got Mini Bar coming up April 11th. That will be exciting.
Always a good time. Always a great event. Mm-hmm. So there you have it. I'm sure many things will crop up in the next week, and we'll talk about them next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast.
Number 300 in the can.
We are Sparta.
Take care.
All right. See ya. Now for another 300.